He's an infamous Miami Casanova, adored by celebrities.
There was Madonna, Jennifer Lopez, Sofia Vergara. People were entranced with him.
He was the king of South Beach.
But he's hiding a dark secret.
He was aggressive, violent.
His drug of choice was rage.
And his famous friends can't protect him from his past.
He put the gun up to her face. He pulled the trigger.
This poor girl, she's soaked in her own mother's blood.
It was a horrible death.
He was a guy who got away, quite literally, with murder.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own. It's America's leading journal, Vanity Fair. Contributing editor Susanna Andrews learns the truth behind the Disco Inferno. It's November 1999, just after midnight on Ocean Drive. That's when the dance clubs start to heat up.
It's this beautiful paradise. The beach, the sky, it's just endless, gorgeous, blue, and all the pastels of the hotels and open-air restaurants. It's devoted to pleasure.
Nightlife is the heartbeat of South Beach, and no one makes its heartbeat faster than Chris Pacello.
He's in his early 20s and he's a superstar. Chris Pacello takes over the nightclub business in South Beach. This is when South Beach was Ibiza. You know, people were going there just to party and just to hang around with the beautiful people. And Chris Pacello was the king of the beautiful people.
He had the nicest cars. You know, he's young. He's not a guy that got hit with the ugly stick, you know?
People were entranced with him. He opened a club called Liquid. Liquid was something new in South Beach.
It was ridiculously successful.
The limousines were pulling up. There was Madonna. And then, you know, brought in Jennifer Lopez and brought in Sean Puffy Combs, Sofia Vergara. There was all the models, Naomi Campbell, Kate Moss.
I remember Sylvester Stallone, Bruce Willis, Schwarzenegger, all the hot celebrities.
They were making money hand over fist.
I think he was a millionaire before he was 30.
Chris Pacello is the reigning king of South Beach. Everything is perfect. And that's when it all goes terribly wrong.
Here is a guy who quite literally was on top of the world, and his world disintegrated.
It was on the evening of February 18th in 1993. I remember it was a very, very cold February day. It was a lovely section of Staten Island, and out of the blue comes this car with these young men.
There were four people in the car that day.
Behind the wheel, an ambitious young thug known to his friends as the Binger.
He got the nickname because he liked to binge on crime.
Anything from fighting to robbing ATMs to stealing cars. If you stole one car, he'd steal three. If you robbed the ATM, he'd rob four.
There was no crime too small, and there was no master plan too outlandish for him to try.
And on this February night, the Binger has plans for a big score.
He masterminded a home invasion.
The Binger, he's behind the wheel, he is the wheel man. Tommy Reynolds is in the passenger seat, he's the gunman. They have Mikey Yamini sitting in the back seat along with a guy named Jimmy Calandra. They were in their early 20s.
The four young men are looking for the home of Sammy Shemtov, a local businessman, and his 46-year-old wife, Judith.
That night, Judith Shemtov was making tea for herself and her husband in their beautiful home. By February 1993, Judith and Sammy Shemtov had only been married, I think, less than a year.
My mother, she met him on a blind date that was set up by his daughter. They got along very well. They had a nice marriage. They had a nice time together.
Each has three grown children from previous relationships. Judith's daughter, Arlen, asked us to hide her identity to spare her children uncomfortable questions about the case.
She raised us by herself. She worked full time. She was always there for us for everything, though. I don't know how she did it with three kids, but she always did. Nothing was more important to her than her children. And everyone who knew her knew that. She was just a beautiful person, inside and out.
Judy Shemtov is now finally living the life that she felt like she deserved. And she thinks that all is well in her world.
After years of struggling as a single mother, Judith's life had never been better. And then...
it was just an ordinary day. I had plans that I had made to go to the movies with a childhood friend of mine. Around 8 o'clock, I was getting ready to go. I was upstairs in my bathroom drying my hair. And my mother and Sammy were sitting at the table. And the doorbell rang. And my mother went to go answer it because she thought it was my friend who she's known, you know, since we were little.
Judith opens the door, and instead of her daughter's friend, there are three young men standing there who suddenly just pushed their way in.
Yamini stood back while Calandra and Reynolds were wearing masks and brandishing guns. Tommy Reynolds had a particularly large gun. It was a .45 caliber. When she opened the door, Tommy Reynolds immediately put the gun up to her face.
They pushed their way in. Sam Shemtov came into the hallway, and that may have startled or frightened the shooter.
And because his nerves were frayed, he accidentally pulled the trigger and shot her in the face. The discharge of the weapon shocked everyone, and as Reynolds and Calandra ran from the door, they instantly got in the car and sped away.
This had gone awry in a way that none of them had imagined or intended.
I came to the top of the stairs, which kind of overlooked the front door, and I was screaming down, like, what happened? What happened? And my mother was laying on the floor, and she wasn't answering. So I came running down the stairs, and then I saw all the blood all around my mom. She was just like in a pool of blood.
Her daughter, Arlen, desperately called 911, begging them to hurry up.
We were just, you know, around my mom trying to just figure out where she was bleeding from.
This poor girl, with her hair still damp, she thinks it's gonna be a normal day, and within minutes, you know, she's soaked in her own mother's blood.
Finally, the police and the ambulance came, but she never regained consciousness. The police asked us if, you know, there would be anyone who would want to harm her in any way. There was no way that someone would have purposely wanted to ever hurt her. It didn't make any sense.
The men who stormed the house had heard a rumor that Sammy Shemtov was hoarding a pile of cash.
Allegedly, there was a safe in the basement, and allegedly in the safe, there was more than $300,000. These guys, if there was money to be had, they would take it by force.
I don't think they planned to kill anybody, but they set up a home invasion.
Home invasion. It sounds so antiseptic, doesn't it? It was a murder. It was a horrible death.
The Binger and his crew didn't get the big score they came for, but they may have gotten away with murder.
They threw the gun off the Verrazano Bridge, and that was the end of it.
The evidence may be gone, But clues to the crime will one day reappear among the beautiful people of Miami's South Beach. Racing away from Staten Island towards Brooklyn, four men in a Mercury sedan speed across the Verrazano Bridge. They throw a handgun into the waters below. One of them just shot Judith Shemtoff in the face as she stood at the door of her Staten Island home. Her husband, Sammy Shemtoff, and her daughter, Arlen, can't understand what just happened or why.
It was just such a difficult situation to begin with. The person who's always been there for you and always taken care of you, it's truly unimaginable because I didn't just lose my mother, I lost my best friend.
The NYPD did its best to investigate, but there was no forensic evidence. The gun was not recovered. There were no witnesses.
There's absolutely no traces left by these young men who had killed her.
The family was intensely investigated because there was a suspicion that it may have been an inside job.
They investigated Judith's former boyfriend, but he took a lie detector test.
Just to rule out that he would do anything to harm her, and he did nothing.
Sammy also told the police that he'd had some kind of conflict with his ex-wife about money. That angle ended up nowhere.
Desperate to learn who killed his wife, Sammy Shemtoff makes a public plea for help.
Sammy put up a reward for any information that anyone had.
$15,000 leading to the arrest of Judith Shemtoff's killer.
But nothing ever happened.
Four young men had come out of nowhere and they'd driven off into the dark.
So it literally became a cold case.
20 minutes away, in another Staten Island neighborhood, lives the ringleader of the gang that murdered Judith Shemtoff, an ambitious young thug known as the Binger. The Binger's real name is Christian, the son of George and Marguerite Ludvigsen.
Chris was born and definitely raised in a section of Brooklyn that was very heavily Italian, and he was the second of three sons. His father worked in nightclubs and I think had a criminal record.
George Ludvigsen, he got shot a few times and he got hooked on painkillers, and a lot of Chris's childhood might have been marred by his father's drug addiction.
Chris would tell people that his father was dead, but he literally wanted nothing to do with his father and hated his father.
When he was about 16, the family moved to Staten Island across the Verrazano Bridge.
They settle into a townhouse on Mercury Lane in a neighborhood where members of New York City's prominent crime families live.
Chris was ashamed of his father. Hence why he took his mother's last name, which is Paciello. Also because it was an Italian last name, and Ludvigsen is a German last name, and he wanted to be deeper in and more affiliated with the Italians.
Chris drops out of high school and starts hanging out with the wrong crowd in the largely Italian neighborhood, looking to make some easy money.
He had trouble at home, he had trouble with his father. The mob was right there.
Chris Paciello soon starts working for the men who run the neighborhood. To his mob friends, Chris Paciello is an earner.
An earner in the mafia life is somebody that brings money to the table. Plain and simple, money. And the more money you get, the better you looked at in the family.
So Chris Pacioppo's claim to fame was by stealing heavy equipment from construction sites. And then he would plow them into the side of a bank building where the ATM machines were located, and he would steal all the cash out of it.
The Binger quickly earns his nickname.
He was certainly a criminal entrepreneur in Brooklyn and Staten Island.
He was a bubblegum gangster, a wannabe. He started to earn enough money that they could impress some of the wise guys who actually meant something.
He was not only effective at getting the money, but also turning over the tribute to higher level mafia officials. And he moved from ATM heists to bank robberies.
He was someone clearly moving up the ranks.
Chris Pacioppo really has one love, only one love. And it's not his mother, and it's not his father, and it's not his friends, and it's never been a girlfriend. It is money.
And on February 18th, 1993, three young men sent by Chris Pacioppo burst into the Shemtoff home looking for the safe Sammy Shemtoff keeps in the basement.
The Binger had inside information that Sammy Shemtoff kept money in the house.
Sammy was a very wealthy guy. He was involved in a plethora of businesses. And the way the story went, he started to brag to a few people in the neighborhood that he didn't trust banks and he was keeping all his cash in his house.
They killed Judith Shemtoff instead. But the murder doesn't stop the Binger.
During and after the time period of the Shemtoff murder, Ludwigson continued to commit crimes.
In 1994, his biggest bank heist took place. His crew robbed the Westminster Bank, and they made off with a significant amount of money.
That was a very big score. It netted Ludwigson more than $300,000. And it was after that that Ludwigson moved to South Beach.
It's Labor Day weekend when Chris Pacioppo arrives in South Beach, Miami. He's here to invest his big score and revive a rundown nightclub financed by the mob.
It was actually a club called Mickey's, which had been partly owned by Mickey Rourke. It was a shabby club. It was sort of a dive.
Mickey Rourke was not very good at the nightclub business, was not making a lot of money.
Pacioppo buys the club from Mickey Rourke and his partner and gives it a new name.
Pacioppo opened his first nightclub, appropriately named Risk.
Pacioppo is partners with a Staten Island associate, a successful nightclub promoter and drug dealer.
Chris Pacioppo hooked up with a very well-known nightclub king named Lord Michael Caruso.
Michael Caruso, he brought talent down to Florida from New York, and the music was, you know, sort of cutting edge for Miami at the time. I think there was a hip-hop night before there were hip-hop nights.
In the beginning, Chris was behind the scenes. He wasn't really making a big pomp and circumstance about himself because he was new to that particular game.
Chris Pacioppo was in the shadows on Risk. His partner was the public face of Risk.
Risk is the hot club in South Beach for a few months, but quickly fades. Pacioppo and Caruso have a falling out.
Now, Risk was a risk, apparently, because it wasn't making a lot of money.
It didn't do as well as he had anticipated, so then there was a fire and it burnt down.
6 months after he'd opened it, it burnt to the ground. Investigators concluded or believed that it was arson, but they had no idea who'd done it.
And Ludwigson got a fairly large insurance payment.
It's enough to start another club. And 24-year-old Chris Pacioppo doesn't need Mike Caruso anymore. He's found someone else who has the social connections he really needs.
Ingrid Caceres was the daughter of a very wealthy Cuban-American businessman.
Ingrid grew up in the nightclubs of South Beach. She also was a little pixie of a club celebrity herself.
Ingrid Caceres was very, very well known and very well established in the South Beach area. She had an A-list of celebrity friends.
In fact, Ingrid Caceres is something of a minor international celebrity through her close friendship with Madonna.
Through Madonna, she knew many, many celebrities in Miami.
He's very calculated in everything he does. He always had a vision. He never envisioned himself as a kid from Brooklyn. He always saw himself as something larger than life.
He was an opportunist, and he was smart enough to take advantage of the opportunities that life handed him.
Chris Pacello loves to bask in the limelight of Miami's hottest social scene. No one knows about the Binger, that thug from Brooklyn with the criminal past. Pacello is now the king of South Beach. But in trendy Miami, nothing lasts forever. Ingrid Caceres, Madonna's gal pal, opens a new club in South Beach, Miami, with a former Brooklyn thug named Chris Pacello. The thief and hustler known as the Binger is about to go big time. Ingrid Caceres is Pacello's ticket to the celebrity world.
Chris hired Ingrid to design and promote his club, Liquid.
Everyone wanted in to this club, everybody.
Madonna was a huge part of the fuel that helped him to rocket to success. He had Ingrid, but Ingrid brought in Madonna, and Madonna brought in all the other celebrities. Opening night, the Klieg lights were flashing through the sky, the limousines were pulling up. It was quite a crowd.
Anybody who was anybody wanted to get into Ingrid and Chris's club and have their picture taken. If you couldn't get into Liquid, you might as well not go to South Beach.
Chris, this time around, did not keep in the background. He was out there in the open. He was very charming.
Instead of being the Binger from Staten Island, he was starting to make his own brand.
In the process of reinventing himself, Chris had a lot of help from Ingrid Caceres, and she revamped his wardrobe. Remade him completely. Dress, manners, how to behave, everything.
He was this sexy bad boy.
I'm a little bit cynical about these things. There are some people that like being around bad people. Moths around a flame, where there's an allure, an attraction, a danger to being around someone who's in the life.
People could see that there was a very rough edge to Chris Pacello. Chris is still in touch with a lot of the mob associates that he knew in New York. People knew he was a tough guy, and they loved that about him.
He's not much of a talker, so he gives an air of mystery, and that's something that women, especially for years, have liked about him.
People could project onto him what they wanted him to be.
Women definitely wanted to be with him. There's just no question about it, you know?
He had a series of very beautiful girlfriends.
He dated Jennifer Lopez. Nikki Taylor was another high-profile person. The longest relationship he had was with Sofia Vergara.
...24-year-old Chris Pacello is now a wealthy and respected businessman and a notorious Casanova. But Love Majeski, a former girlfriend from Staten Island, remembers him very differently.
I was just a young girl falling in love with what I thought was this impressive guy was gonna rescue me. And he has a really great way of playing the hero, the knight. I made a grave mistake in believing in this person. And at that time, he was beginning to put his hands on me. Anytime he would have a bad mood or something went wrong, he would take it out on me. And it was aggressive, violent.
He was a very big, very powerful guy. If he fought you, you weren't gonna win. And he was a thuggish guy.
He had this hair trigger temper. Here's a guy in a very expensive suit running around at packed nightclub, and at the slightest provocation, he could flip out.
There was a celebrated case where Mr. Universe, no small guy, Mike Quinn, was at his club and got into a beef, and Chris broke a bottle over his head.
He was sued for that in civil court, but it was determined that Chris was acting in self-defense.
It was one of the many times that Chris Paciello let his anger get the best of him. He probably should have had the bouncer do it.
People knew that Chris could be very violent in a fight. And he beat up people in his clubs who behaved badly.
I think there's more than a lot of rage inside of him. Someone just has to scratch the surface the right way and they're gonna get the full impact of it.
What would really propel him into trouble was not drugs or alcohol, but just fury.
Paciello's temper earns him a reputation with local law enforcement. His victims file police reports. Most often, the cases are settled out of court. Nothing seems to damage his celebrity reputation.
He was the king of South Beach.
He seemed charmed. Nothing seemed to touch him. He had a yacht, he had a palazzo on Flamingo Drive, he drove a Mercedes.
In South Beach, he was a hero. People loved him.
Ludwigson was taking off. You know, he was now Chris Paciello, the golden boy.
Two years after Liquid opens, Paciello hires Andrew Doler, a Miami Beach patrolman and former Brooklyn cop, to beef up security.
I was working the club in uniform and in an off-duty capacity. Chris would show up, him and I started talking, and we kind of hit it off.
Andrew is from the home country, Brooklyn, so they bond over that. Chris is really taken in. He not only has a source into the Miami Beach Police Department, but he has a new friend.
Chris was a guy that, you know, definitely you could hang out with. Very, very nice guy. If he didn't like you, different story. He had that mean streak in him.
Doler offers Paciello more than friendship. He provides inside information about impending drug raids at the club.
This made Chris feel like a big shot, like he had a cop on the take, just like the old bosses in Brooklyn.
And for him to have a cop who's legitimate, sell his shield, sell his badge, was huge.
Doler's loyalty is put to the test when a party promoter who worked at Liquid turns on Paciello.
A partner of his went out on his own and opened up this mega club right down the block. And Chris, he was very upset about it. He's like, you gotta take care of this guy. He wanted me to help kill this guy.
I want him whacked, is what he says.
And I tell him, look, I'll take care of him.
Chris Paciello is not gonna lose a fight. Because the issue of the respect and the issue of his reputation is on the line. This is somebody who fights for fun.
Facing competition from a rival club owner, Chris Paciello asks his trusted security man, Miami police officer Andrew Doler, to get rid of him permanently.
And I tell him, look, if we do it on a beach, well, I'll be able to handle it. He said, all right, you know, he goes, let's do this, let's do this.
The long and short of it is he wants him to kill this club owner.
But more than a month later, the rival club owner is still alive and well. Worse yet, his club is raking in big profits. As it turns out, a rival club is the least of Chris Pacciello's problems.
The FBI, they have been trying to nail Chris Pacciello. He was into money laundering, drug dealing, that he had been associated with mafia families up in New York. They couldn't get anybody inside. They couldn't get an undercover in. He always sniffed them out.
After tracking Pacciello for 6 years, the FBI investigation is hitting a dead end. Searching for some way to get inside the club, investigators learn about another tough Brooklyn guy who happens to be a Miami cop. The FBI brings patrolman Andrew Doler in for a little talk.
I figured, okay, they're just picking my brain. I said, why don't you take a cop and portray him as a dirty cop? It's never been done before. And they looked at me like I just split the atom. They said to me, okay, when can you start? And I'm like, whoa, you know, I'm not doing this. My boss kind of talks me into it.
What Chris doesn't know is that Andy Doler, former NYPD detective, is actually working undercover for the Miami Beach Police Department and the FBI.
Doler spends the next 2 years getting closer and closer to Pacciello, a savvy player who doesn't let his guard down easily.
It was a constant cat and mouse game to see what kind of person I was in the beginning, or if I was, you know, wearing a wire. We were always meeting in places that were loud, getting in a pool or going to a strip club.
Andy Doler fit the bill. He looked like he could have hung around just as easily in Brooklyn as he did in South Beach.
Dealing with a guy who has a tendency to be violent and, more importantly, is beholden to the most violent people on the planet. There were many times where I felt I was in danger. It just didn't hit me until I was home. Didn't hit me till I was in bed.
Andy Doler got so close to Chris that Chris introduced him to Ali Boy Persico, boss of the Colombo family, which is unheard of in those kind of circles.
Ali Boy Persico, a notorious and ruthless gangster. Where there is money to be made, the mob comes and wants a piece. Ludwigson was actually giving Persico a regular cut of the proceeds of liquid.
Chris called me up and said, let's go on a boat trip. We head up north, the intercoastal, to a bar right on the water. And as we're pulling up, I can see Alphonse Persico. I know exactly who he is.
So, unbeknownst to Chris, the law is getting close.
Now that I was meeting with heads of mafia families, it's a big major break in the case.
At the very end of 1999, the Brooklyn U.S. Attorney's Office had obtained an indictment and an arrest warrant.
What Andy Doler and Florida law enforcement officials don't know is that a task force in New York has uncovered evidence against Pacciello for a crime that takes precedence over the Miami case.
Things began to unravel for Chris Pacciello.
Members of his old crew identify Chris Pacciello as the getaway car driver who planned the botched break-in that resulted in the murder of Judith Shemtoff.
7 years after she died was the first time I heard anything about it, that they knew who it was. It made me sick to my stomach that this guy was living this great life, making tons of money, having a party every night after he had been involved with my mother's death.
He began to get a really distinct sense that his past could eat him alive.
Chris Pacciello, South Beach nightclub king, had been unmasked as Christian Ludwigson, low-life gangster.
He was facing the possibility of life in prison. He started out by pleading not guilty.
Chris has no felony convictions. We knew that the government was investigating. They've done everything they can to try to find something. And as it stands right now, They have found nothing.
The defense attorneys defend him as this upstanding businessman and philanthropist who didn't have any mob ties whatsoever, and how dare you?
This was a very hotly contested case.
The Brooklyn thug known as the Binger had always escaped punishment. Now the king of South Beach, Chris Pacello intends to beat the law one more time. But will his famous friends be able to help him this time? South Beach is reeling from the arrest of their golden boy, Chris Pacello, for racketeering, bank robbery, and murder.
When he was first arrested, all of these celebrities and all of his girlfriends stood by him. Everyone showed up in the courtroom.
His case drawing crowds of Miami Beach's most beautiful to court.
He's innocent, and I think everyone here today knows that he is.
Every one of them was saying that he was an innocent man, wrongly accused. He would have never done these things.
But they said, not him. That must have been somebody else, you know? Or if it was, he's made up for all the bad stuff he's done.
You throw around enough money and people will just simply close their eyes to what it is you're doing. But there's a family out there that lost their mother. And whether or not he pulled the trigger himself, he had to answer for it.
For Judith Shemtoff's family, justice may finally be within reach.
He went to Miami and opened up all these clubs and became like this big, important person, but not even giving it a second thought that he took my mother's life and ruined people's lives in the process.
Pacello continues to insist he is innocent until just before his trial is scheduled to begin.
That night, he went in and started talking.
He flipped, pleading guilty and becoming a government witness.
Chris rolls on everybody, his bosses, his friends, his underlings, and before long, he took down some of the biggest names in organized crime. He ratted out members of three of the five New York City crime families,
including Alphonse Persico, allegedly very senior member of the mafia, an alleged don who was eventually convicted and is spending his life in prison.
In return, Chris got a reduced sentence. He has a guy that might have done life.
He was ultimately sentenced to 7 years and served about six and change.
Two of the men who invaded the Shemtoff house, Jimmy Calandra and Michael Yamini, also cooperate and receive lesser sentences. Tommy Reynolds, the man who shot Judith Shemtoff, pleads guilty to murder.
Chris put Tommy Reynolds away for life.
Tommy Reynolds was first sentenced to life in prison, and I thought that was too good for him. He ultimately got 37 years, and if he gets out of jail at all, will be a very old man. Is that justice? I'm not sure. I hope that the family feel it is.
He said that it was an accident. He was sorry that he did it. He didn't mean to do it. It doesn't change what he did. I don't feel bad for him. He took someone's life for no reason. He should be in prison for the rest of his life.
When Chris Pacello is released from federal prison in 2006, he is offered a new identity.
They actually offered him witness protection, and he didn't spend one second in it.
He couldn't stand it and came out. No one thought he would live.
The mafia code is, if you rat, you die.
But Chris Pacello doesn't go into hiding. He returns something of a hero to South Beach,
where he was welcomed shockingly with open arms. How is it that Chris Pacello is still breathing? He gave up. Big names.
You know, I think that's one of the most astonishing parts of this story, that he lived. He didn't suffer the punishment that you would have expected the mob would inflict on an informant.
It's a conversation I have a lot with some of my friends from the NYPD. So he didn't give up, you know, low-level drug dealers who were working for the mafia. He gave up serious players. And yet he's strutting around South Beach and doesn't seem to have a care in the world. But it's completely inexplicable to me.
You sort of had magic dust sprinkled on him there again, because it's as though nothing happened. So you have this man who pled guilty to racketeering and murder and bank robbery, and now he's living the life.
His specialty is smoke and mirrors, just like the nightclub. When you go into a nightclub in the daytime, it's filthy, the bar is gross, it smells of booze, there's stains on the carpet. But at night, it's a whole different world. It looks magnificent, you know? So smoke and mirrors is just the perfect, you know, analogy for him. But mirrors crack and smoke fades.
He is who he is. That'll never change. He still was involved in killing an innocent woman for no reason. I don't think he's remorseful about what he did.
Is it possible he's a changed man? 100%. Did he find God in prison? A lot of people do. Does he try to live his life differently? Maybe. To me, the bottom line is that somebody who lived as grotesquely as Chris Pacciello did is at his very core the wise guy.
Chris Pacciello picks up where he left off. A chance to start all over. Judith Shemtoff never got that chance.
I think about all that she's missed. She should have been there to walk us down the aisle. She would have been the best grandmother in the world. She worked hard her whole life and she never got to enjoy anything. A 46-year-old innocent woman. My last vision of her was bleeding to death. You know, that's not something that you could just wipe out of your memory. Something that will always be with me.